Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm introducing a new show, Oneos Olympus. Yes, that's hard to pronounce in Greek. In English, it means the new Olympus. And I'll be speaking with Pamela Joy Fernsler first. Greetings and welcome, Pamela. How are you?
Hi. I'm a little tired after an exciting day.
Yes, tell me about your exciting day. You're at shore leave.
Yes, I am, and it's been very interesting. I've met a lot of people in the vendor room who are interested in my new talk on the biophysics of astrology.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed some things were, like the headbands were made with Greek and Egyptian designs. So
awesome.
I got one of those. And there's a lot of Star Trek panels this time around, a lot of them, and some Farscape, but a whole lot of Star Trek this year. So I'm trying to catch up on all of that.
Yeah, I need to catch up too. I saw the first season of Picard, but I haven't seen the other seasons. I saw Discovery the first two seasons, Below Decks the first season, and that's about it. I haven't seen anything since that time.
Okay.
Do you think
so
all these
shows? What is it that you want to know from me?
Well, you have as part of your personal spirituality the Olympians, and not only run-of-the-mill Olympians, but some of the 12 interact with you. So, because my efforts are Olympian efforts, and Olympus's hands are in everything that I'm doing, I just want to get a clear sense of where exactly everybody is standing. So you are an esotericist of many years. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you've studied many esoteric traditions, most notably the Rosicrucian tradition. Is that correct?
That is true, but I've also studied with the Keepers of the Flame, which is a subset of the Church Universal and Triumphant. I have many of their books and lessons. And they also include messages from the Olympians.
The Olympians in the Church Universal and Triumphant appear in many capacities as ascended masters. Some of them are Elohim. So they're very present there. And several of our hosts have passed through those gates and kept that flame while they were still there. Most notably the Duncans, Diane and Michael Duncan. They were part of the Church Universal and Triumphant for a while.
Yeah, very nice. Also the I Am Mysteries, led by Lori Toy, who is also under a mentorship from Saint Germain, who introduced many of the Olympians to her as well. So I've never been far from Olympians, whether personal and private or through some of the so-called mystery schools.
And how did the Olympians first enter your life, aside from through the teachings?
Basically, through writings. They just came through me. My first story, a short story, which has never been published actually, was from the People of the Sun, which I called the Apollini after Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
So my first connection was basically with Apollo, the sun. And the writing just came through my mind. And after that, I developed stories about twins. And it would be twin flames, in essence, not just physical twins. And I developed more and more in my writings with the Olympians than with any of the other subsets of gods and goddesses.
And what about the Olympians makes your resonance with them so powerful?
Oh, well, one of the ways that can be seen is through my astrology chart, which is quite a remarkable chart if you look at it from more than a mundane point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I have six trines and a couple of other things that indicate then in the ninth house, I'm associated with higher beings. So there's that point in there, if you just look at my chart from a mundane point of view, you will never see that.
Mm-hmm.
But through the Rosicrucian Fellowship, which is different from Amwork, I learned the astrology and the esoteric points that can come through it. And some of the others that I'm familiar with as astrologers have also pointed these things out. And basically, it was pretty much a learning experience by intuition.
And so were there any of the aspects of the Olympians you resonated with through the teachings primarily before they came to you in the writings? For instance, a lot of people...
The writings came first, and then the mystery schools.
Okay.
Which helped explain what I was going through in a limited fashion, to tell you the truth. But the rest are memories.
So your association with Olympus precedes your current birth and incarnation?
It does, yes, for thousands of years.
So are you an Olympian yourself, or are you associated with the Olympians?
They are a kind of cousin race to to the people or beings that I am emanated from. When they first came to this galaxy, they were as one, and then one branched off to deal with the more, and the other, which we know as the Olympians and other gods, came to this earth. They dealt with matter. So now I'm both matter and, esoteric. I guess you could say esoteric. But they come together again to create a third race. And you would probably think of that as new Olympians.
Right. I'm at this point, I'm getting older, and there are many less days before me than there are behind me. So I'm trying to get to the core of what I've been working on my whole life and just do that as much as I possibly can while I'm still here. And it's very much an Olympian effort, which has been in the background previously, and now I'm putting it in the foreground where it belongs, and I'm refocusing everything I'm doing to focus more centrally on Olympus. But this isn't the Olympus that people learn about in a school that's given birth to the mythology. They are, but now we're in a totally different place than they were when those stories came into being.
That is so true.
And yes, the Olympians did split off in various ways. They're also called Titans by many because genealogically they're Titans. Humanity is said to be of Titanic race as well. And they're genetically compatible with us in that they can have children with us. And these children are often lightly incarnated, but they're incarnated for a purpose, and it's usually a very specific purpose, and that's survived in the mythology. That's right there in the mythological tales. The fact that they're
being... But if I can correct you for a moment?
If you can,
I am
sure.
Not of the Titans either. This is an entirely different, separate thing from the Olympians and the Titans that went before it. This is an entirely different emanation. That's the one I'm from.
From when there were beings of life? Because before there were Titans and later Olympians, they were primordials. Before then, there were beings of light.
Yes, and they stayed beings of light. And those are the ones I'm from.
Okay, the Olympians
are still
beings of light,
too. The brother race, or sister race, as you will.
Even in the mythology, when Dionysus' mother was tricked by Hera into asking to see Zeus in his full form, something tried to dissuade her from, she would not relent, and he appeared as he truly was, a being of light.
Right. But basically, that's what they all are.
Mm-hmm.
But some came in to deal with matter
right.
as a form of evolution. The form of evolution was to combine them with the other beings of light who stayed beings of light to create something new, the third race. And that's part of what I'm being told I'm part of. Part of this third race that's coming into being.
And what is the purpose of this third race, if you could share?
Well, because we will be getting a new galaxy. And so we need to have another race of beings to adapt to that galaxy. It will be new. It is coming this way. And it will probably intersect with this. And well, not too long from now, like it did before, when they first came here.
So
kind of
this
lot to take in, right?
Yeah, it is. And again, each person with Olympian contacts that I speak to has a different vocabulary to describe what it is that is happening, but there are many common elements, and the Olympians are involved in very many projects, not just the very few that I'm aware of. So I'm just trying to orient myself and to get a sense of how everything hangs together and connects. And what, you have a relationship with Zeus, Hera, and several other Olympians.
It could be put into two words, I think. Soul genetics.
Okay. Can you explain that a little?
Life is created. Okay, that we know. Not always been physical birth. It's been thought emanations. And the thought emanations need to go through a cycle of seven galactic days, if you will. And these days are periods that the entire planet goes through as well. The first one was the Saturn period. The second one was the Moon period. The third one is the Sun period. The fourth one is the Earth period, in which matter attains its own conscience, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will go into the Jupiter period and the Venus period, and then finally the last period. And this is all in the Rosicrucian Fellowship teachings. And as the planet evolves, so will the humanity upon it. And once it goes through, I've seen how this happens to the Earth. That was one of the visions I used to have. And of course, I wrote it down. And it's not done by the Creator himself, but by those he assigns to it, some of which are Elohim.
Yes. Elohim is one of those words. It means Lord. And it's the same as Lord, the same as the word Baal. It's the same as many different terms that are used to denote something that is a power. It could be a human power as well as a divine power. In theosophy, though, the Elohim are specific beings, like angels are specific beings.
And then you have the thrones and the powers and the dominions.
Right.
In those levels. And they're sort of like dealt with in the Urantia book as well.
Correct. I'm not up on the Urantia book. I've worked with people who are involved in the Urantia book. I've read the Greek parts of it. And we've had several shows where I discussed the Greek parts of it with several Urantia book people. And I've learned a lot by listening to Urantia book people, but I haven't read the whole book yet.
Oh, it's difficult to read the whole book at one time. You have to treat it more like a reference book. And if you want to read it corroboration with what you're evolving into, just open it to a page and read it. You get more by intuition than you do from page one to page 300.
I do that. It's called bibliomancy. And I do it when I used to teach at LaGuardia Community College. I used to teach a psychology class. And I was discussing different forms of divination, and I encouraged my students to try them. And we did bibliomancy, and I'd ask them, just pick a book, any book, ask a question, any question, open it random, stick your finger there and see if you get your answer. And a lot of the times you do. So I have no doubt that the book would provide some really interesting answers to questions.
Here, you can do that with things like Isis Unveiled and The Secret
yeah.
Doctrine and the third book that she wrote, which has a limited edition.
If you hear booming, it's because they're celebrating the 4th of July today. And right across the street from where I am is where they're celebrating it. So if you hear bombs going off and things like that, pay it no mind.
I'm used to that. We used to live out at Chambersburg near Letterkenny, and they had bombs which they would set off because they were no longer useful. So every now and then the cabinet, the metal cabinets we had would rattle, you know. They were just setting things off. It's like it was living in a war zone. And it's like, oh, there they go again, just setting off some more bombs they can't use anymore. So, yeah, mostly incendiary bombs, but they would shake things up for a little bit, for a couple miles or so.
And that's what they're doing in the here and now. Maybe that's an omen of some sort. Now, one of the things that with you is that the Olympians treat you like friend or family. And I've encountered many such, you know, who have a familiar relationship with the Olympians. I certainly, you know, am treated as a friend or family in my interactions. And the Olympians seem very involved in certain parts of your life. Do you care to share a little bit about that?
Well, I could try. For of course, the longest time, what I knew, I had to keep within myself because it just wasn't discussed as real, even among science fiction people. So for me to speak of that kind of makes me a little hesitant.
Uh-huh.
I know you said people in the past have made me, it seemed like I was nervous, but when you hide a treasure for so long and then you open the box, it's like your heart beats faster and you wonder if this is the right thing to do. And I think it is, but I'm wondering how it's affecting the people who hear this and what my words mean to them.
That is very wise.
So,
I've wondered a lot of the same thing, and that's why I've been hesitant to share a lot of things that I know. But people are ambushing me with this information on my podcast and in my talks. So a lot of people are coming to me and spilling the beans on a lot of things that I kept quiet my entire life. So I figured this is the time to share. Don't share anything you're not comfortable sharing. That's the only thing I can tell you. I trust your intuition, and I would not violate your feelings.
Well, they are like family, more than friends.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've always been protected by them for some reason. Of course, now I know what that reason is. And in my stories, which I have not yet published, you know, it's like I know them. I know them all. And I feel them all because, as I told you in previous podcasts, I am an empath. And
right.
I'm a full empath. I can feel things out toward Pluto, if you like. I know what beings in our galaxy, in our solar system, I should say, feel like. It's all that. And, of course, the training I had with the mystery schools helps me to not compartmentalize, but synthesize all of that together into one essence. So that I can say I am all or many because I know them. I know their essence. I may not know their thoughts, but I know what they are. I think that's the closest way I can put it. I know what they are. And I am comfortable with that. Aphrodite has been huge. Artemis, obviously. Apollo's twin, and until recently, I hadn't been in much contact with Zeus, but with Hera, yes. We do a lot of weather together, She's a very powerful person. You know, she can't come too close to the earth because of her power, you know, over weather and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when she does, it kind of, you know, creates a little bit of a catastrophe. So if they can work through humans, which humans are set up to channel metaphysical energies, if you will, they've always been set up for that.
Mm-hmm.
If they can do that, then working through matter kind of diminishes the intensity of that power, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. But the reason I am so hooked into this is because of the thing that happened on February 15th, 1971, and changed everything for me. And that is when I saw the golden light with the 12 equilateral triangles on its border. And I knew it for what it was. And it emerged with me. And from that point on, everything woke up inside me that was latent. And I started remembering things. And my one thing that I have to do this lifetime is just remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been. I have been. The things that are shown to me, the things that I come in connection with and contact with, but past life memories written down as stories. It's all memories, real ones. And the lives I've had to live, you know, they were all part of helping me remember over thousands of years. Because what happened before I came to this planet was not good. And that's why they brought me here.
I remember also, and I've been publishing, I published one or two so far with Tim Beckley and Tim Schwartz, respectively. And I didn't know, because they were very weird, the tales I did share. Some of them that happened recently, but they were accepted right away for the anthologies that they got published in, and I was told if I had more things like this, that they'd be interested in publishing it. So I think the time is right to share such stories, at least my stories. Have I ever shared with you my primal vision?
Yes, you have.
Okay, my primal vision is
over
something
over a year ago, I think.
Is whenever I close my eyes, my primal vision's there. So it's like my instruction booklet that doesn't go away. But it's been a very interesting adventure with that. And I'm glad that you responded to the call and that you identified yourself as one of the people in my primal vision. So I'm looking forward to whatever future adventures take place in this incarnation and others beside it.
Oh, undoubtedly. I still have things to show you when you have time.
I never have time, but I always have time. So we'll make time.
That's the best thing to do, make time.
Now, you're also involved in Star Trek fandom, and I got involved in Star Trek fandom for many years, way back in the day, in the, like, 80s, and I guess the mid-80s to the mid-90s would be a fair assessment of when I was involved in Star Trek fandom. And at the time, there were a lot of people there who were looking for their soul's home. And they knew that certain things on Star Trek and other science fiction adventures were kind of like memories or similar to what they remembered and what they felt like they belonged to. And so they were becoming mm-hmm. part of the fandom to find the source of that. So I remember that was a very common thing back in the day. But I've been away from fandom for a very long time, and I've been told that it's changed, that it's more cosplay now and things like that. Are mm-hmm. there people still flocking to fandom looking for their soul's home?
Yes, they are.
There are. Okay, great.
It's more like, yes, there are. Some of us older ones are still in that, but some of the younger ones don't realize why they're attracted to this. And so they do the cosplay and stuff like that, because it's also a subconscious thing that's happening. And you can see it through the movies and the stories that are from Star Trek, maybe from Star Wars in a more limited fashion, but also through the British and the Japanese science fiction that come out. They have their different perspectives. Have you ever seen the Chen Yun dancing concert?
No, I have not. Tell me about it.
You can't. If it comes to your area, and it should, it's incredible. It's people from another world coming to Earth, and the dance evolves from there. As the, you know, it's a Chinese perspective, and it's somebody who says in the very beginning of the show, who will come with me to Earth? And thousands of people leave their planet to go to the, you know, come to Earth.
Uh-huh.
And that's part of their mythology. As, you know, the planet is populated by people from another world. And I'm sure at this point it would be worlds, plural.
I'm going to ask
you. It's very moving. It's very beautiful.
I'm going to ask you after the show if you can PM or email me the name of that and also the other person with the I Am movement that you studied under. I'm not very familiar with her, so I'd like to check up and learn more about that as well.
Oh, yeah, the I Am mysteries. They're an ascension mystery at this point. Also, the use of the word Elohim in Hebrew, I Am is plural.
Right.
So if you want one Elohim, it's Eloh.
Eloah, yeah, or Eloh. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. So to be called an Elohim is actually a misdirection, because you need one Eloh, and Elohim is many. So you can't call Zeus an Elohim because he's one Eloh.
Correct. However, in the Neo-Theosophical jargon, they make that grammatical error, and it's become the term that they use for a singular as well as a plural Eloah or Elo. So that's why
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Are you familiar with Alice Bailey's Hercules stuff, The Labors of Hercules, where she ties into the Zodiac?
Yes, it was also reprinted through the Rosicrucian Fellowship.
Okay.
So I have that.
She makes several major errors in there, which other people have pointed out, so I don't need to point them out. But it still works, even with the errors. It works very well.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of, I've been making more public my Herculean labor practice, because anyone who's attuned to Hercules and any of his guises, you do the labors. That's what you do, the labors in their various many forms and in their tapestries of symbolism. Now, our guest for the second half hour just PM'd me. She's stuck in a taxi in Manhattan. So she doesn't know if she can come on. Do you have a little bit extra time, or do you need to go? I don't want to take up your time if you don't have it.
Yeah, I have some extra time. I make time for you, my brother.
Thank you. I'm greatly appreciative of it. Now, in terms of what we're doing, I would like to make you one of my major sages and seers, and for you to have your own platform so that you can do your work more readily. And I know that proceed at your comfort level. I'm not just going to throw you in there. Now you have a show. Goodbye. Take care. You know, we'll do it together until you feel comfortable doing it your own way, if that would be helpful to you.
Okay. I am told to say yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, bug off, Saint Germain.
And is there any Olympian that you are attuned to enough that you can speak for?
Artemis.
And Hera, okay. I'm the Ashtar.
I should say Apollo and Aphrodite too. I mean, we're all like the big four here.
Okay.
And Zeus is just recent.
Okay, so we'll sort that out. But I had several times in the past I created a council, I guess you can call it, a committee, you can call it whatever you want, but it's basically people whose attunement is the different Olympians, so that I could capture different perspectives. Yeah, basically, I'm here doing my thing, so whatever decision I make, I need to, you know, I take responsibility for it, so it has to be my decision. But I also know that it's foolish just to go with what you have in your head or what you feel should be done. So I always like bouncing questions off of other people who represent other perspectives of divine wisdom. And this way I might have a fuller perspective before I make the decisions I need to make. So I'm forming that slowly. The other guest that we had, she's one of the few people I know that's very attuned to Demeter, or Demeter, as you call her in Greek. So I wanted to get a sense of who you might be the speaker for as I pull this thing together. But that's coming in the future. It's not here now, so we don't have to worry about it yet.
Artemis can't wait. She's okay, so eager to come forth.
Greetings, Artemis. Welcome. We've worked in the past. I've worked with both Artemis and Apollo when I was more involved with colleges and other institutions of learning. Since that's part of both of their portfolios. The last time I was really involved with education, I was in Pennsylvania over a decade ago. So I welcome Artemis. Artemis also has gotten involved in my work with family literacy, where moms, they're usually single moms, but sometimes single dads who have to raise their kids. And the kids are having a difficult time in school, so the family needs to, the parent or the need to get involved. So we had family literacy programs were operating for some colleges, and I was the director or the coordinator, or, you know, I had different titles for different programs. But Artemis and Apollo were very involved in that as well. So it's been a while, and I welcome them.
Yeah, she wants to be known. It would be interesting to see how she speaks through me.
That would be very interesting. And I have some questions I can ask now, and we could test that. How do you feel about that?
You mean right now we could try it?
We could try it right now and see what happens. One of the things I did when I came back to northeastern New Jersey was I got involved in a lot of things. Unfortunately, I got involved in too many things, and I had to let some of them go. One of the things I let go was I was part of the board of a local nature center, and I also got involved in voting initiatives that inform people about legislation that affected animals. So we signed petitions, we had demonstrations, we went and talked to politicians and things like that. And unfortunately, that too I had to cut back on, although recently I was recruited to do that again to a limited degree. One of Artemis's symbols is the heart or the deer, and another is the bear. So here in New Jersey, especially in my neck of New Jersey, there are problems with deer and bears. So I wrote an article for our local borough newspaper about, you know, how to keep yourself and your family safe from bears and how to live with bears. But I want to get more involved. Again, my time problem is right now that I have very little time and have a lot of things to do. But I feel very strongly to get involved in that because it's very clearly an Artemis type of thing. And I was calling it the Arcadia Project when I was doing it. So how much involvement should I give to that right now in Artemis's perspective, since that's her domain?
How much should you give to that?
Yes.
Oh, as you know, she's very involved with nature, but she's also very involved with neuroscience, which is something she needs to bring out. And she's also very involved with certain kinds of reasoning methods. So she wants to be known for that too, not just nature and ecology and stuff. It's like she could be working with Demeter for that. But
okay.
She wants to be known for other things as well. And you mentioned the heart. If you sort of subconsciously realize it, she was in Harry Potter. The heart
in
the stag.
Okay.
Yeah, her symbol was in there, the heart and the stag. She was in Harry Potter. Sort of really surreptitious, but the Greek gods kind of worked their way into things sort of more or less anonymously, and unless you really understand and know and look, you don't see them there. But they are imprinted, you know, on your subconscious too. And that's where they want it to be, so that you remember. So the heart, which is Harry Potter's father's symbol, that was, you know, that was her.
So if Artemis wants to be known for and remembered for these new areas, and since part of what I'm working on is the astral or spiritual or outer space or UFO or how you define that aspects of the Olympians, which is even in the part you shared from the Rosicrucian Brotherhood with the luminaries and the planets and the different stages of humanity, that's the information I'm working primarily now on taking out. So if you would like to introduce Artemis in those capacities in that particular endeavor, I would welcome you.
Yeah, also xenobiology, which we see in science fiction all the time.
Right. So you can be the voice of Artemis in that particular area, and we can weave it into what we're doing so that she can be known in that capacity. Would Artemis be okay with that?
She would. I know that for sure.
Okay, thank you, Artemis. And is there anything Artemis wants to add to these questions so that we can keep it in mind as we're designing things?
Artemis wants us to be very careful of reproducing humanity in artificial intelligence. The creativity would be lost, and it's extremely important to understand that.
That brings up another area. Bill Wadman, who's taken some time off from the program due to non-program-related issues, he was starting to warn about AI and the dangers of AI, and he and I discussed doing a regular show on AI so that we can monitor what's happening and, again, ring the alarm bells that people are ringing and showing people why we need to be very cautious in this area. So because Bill is out of the picture and that still needs to get done, would you like to do that in the name of Artemis?
I could do that.
Okay.
And she's pleased to hear me say that too.
I'm glad to hear it. So you're now the voice of Artemis on the Pride of Olympus, in addition to being our mysteriologist or mysterionomer.
Sort of a voice, I guess. You know, it wouldn't be her voice coming through my vocal cords, of course.
Right.
But I would be in contact with her and understand her thoughts.
Right. And you would be the voice of Artemis that is speaking to what I'm doing in that particular area. So that's how I define the voices. Because Artemis, as you pointed out, and all the Olympians, in fact, speak through their symbols. So the heart was there in Harry Potter. I'm not a big Harry Potter fan, so I spotted that, but it didn't really like register deeply in my brain. But as you brought it up, I could see it.
It's called a Patronus.
Mm-hmm.
In Harry Potter, you know, the thing that is closest to your heart that you think of when you say expecto patronum, then they're happiest memory brings forth that kind of animal that's associated with them. So it was the hart or the deer, as you would say, which was also very sacred to Artemis, especially in the groves of Dodonus, the ancient grove.
That was Zeus's oak tree grove, if I remember correctly, Dodona.
Right, because it was also, the trees were also the oracle in there.
Yes. Now, Zeus...
Which you can see that in the Percy Jackson novels, too.
Yeah, as you pointed out, they appear in all sorts of things if you know where to find, you know, if you know what you're looking for, you could spot them through their symbols and through their themes. But if you don't know what you're looking for, then it, you can't see it.
Now, we have a certain subset of science fiction that dresses up like animals.
The furries.
Tell me that's not Artemis. Tell me that's not Artemis's influence.
Yeah, those creatures in antiquity were said to live in Arcadia, which was sacred to Artemis. It was a place full of wilderness, the wild. And I just announced I'm doing a bunch of shows on the demi-humans or the exotics, as they were called, exotica in Greece.
Okay.
So you've encountered, I've encountered incarnate exotica or, you know, elves, folklore creatures, animal people, and all sorts of subsets of those things. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Sometimes you can see them in Doctor Who, too. They're not so nice.
Well, no. I wouldn't describe many of them as nice. some of them are, and they're very powerful. There was an incarnate centaur that I got the chance to interview years ago, but then he passed away, and I haven't been able to find any other incarnate centaurs, or at least incarnate centaurs who are willing to talk about it. There was a movement that started, and a friend of mine helped start the movement years ago, decades ago. But they left when it started getting more RPG. It became like a LARP or a role-playing game more than a spiritual path of discovery. So I haven't really looked into that in years as well.
Okay.
Since you still go to conventions and you're at a convention now in Shore Leave, how receptive do you think people would be if we took it on the road to conventions when we're ready to do so?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They're ready.
They're ready now? Okay,
yes.
Gotta move fast.
Yes, we've been ready. For at least a decade, my brother.
Okay, so I got to start moving in that area. I have to talk to Bob Bosler and see how.
Well, he's here too.
Oh, Bob, if you see Bob, you know, basically tell him then we're ready to go. So give me like a month or so to pull everything together, and we'll go and we'll take conventions by storm. It was lots of fun years ago. Met lots of wonderful people. Met lots of wonderful celebrities. And some of the friendships lasted for a very long time, and now I'm still meeting wonderful people through fandom like yourself, and reconnected with Bob and Wayne and everybody.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, so off the air, you and I will have a conversation, and we will start there, and we have logos and all sorts of other things, and I guess I'll see what I look like in gold lamé if I'm going to use Apollo as a model from Who Mourns for Adonis. If not, I'll wear something different, and we'll take it from there.
Do you remember that design? Do you remember that design I sent you last year?
Yes.
With the black hat and the velvet, the velvety gold suit and black pants and stuff?
Yes, if you could resend that. My filter on Google isn't working as well as it worked. And it's difficult to find old emails and things. So if you could resend that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I have old emails back to 2006. Oh, my God.
Me too.
All right, then.
Let me check to see what's going on with my other guest. Okay, I haven't heard back from her, so we'll assume at this point that let me just check one more thing. Nope, she hasn't gotten back to me. Let me just send a quick note.
I hope she's all right.
Yeah, she's in a taxi. She was at an event also. It's the wonders of the information age.
Yeah. To err is human, but to really screw up, you need a computer.
Yes, definitely. We'll give that a couple of minutes. So what have you been doing at Shore Leave, other than giving a presentation?
Just attending panels. There was a panel on science and magic. The magic is, you know, magicians perform on stage. I was actually a volunteer. I got to do a little magic myself, so that was kind of cool.
Oh, very cool. What type of magic did you do?
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. I balanced one nail on another. And it was like one of those really long construction nails. Like it's about, 6 inches long and really thick. And I remember it had the number 28 on the top of each nail.
Mm-hmm.
So by balancing the nail, it wasn't head to head. It was crosswise on top of a vertical nail. And that, the magic there was the balance. So that was kind of cool. And then the other one was a quarter put on a stack of cards, and I had to write a little symbol or something on the quarter and pick a card, which I did. Six of hearts, by the way, Aphrodite's number, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And hearts and six.
Uh-huh.
And put it in the stack, place the quarter on top of it, set fire to it. And you know what? That quarter landed on top of the six of hearts.
Oh, very cool.
How did he do that? and I was right there watching. It's like, oh, my God. Magic is cool. Artemis loves magic.
Magic is indeed cool. And many of the Olympians are amused by magic and use magic. Now, Aphrodite, or Venus, as some people call her, has been very active in the things that I'm doing also. And she's been interacting not only with Athena, but with another group of people we have in our cosmic groups, which are Michael and Diane Duncan. And Athena asked them to start a worldwide religion of love. So I'm helping them by making the world a more loving place, at least in my circles of influence that I have on this planet. And I'm also giving them a platform so they can spread their message. Has Aphrodite been talking about anything she's doing to you, or has she expressed any desires of things she wishes done?
Aphrodite and some of the other freed gods from around the world, like Umkahe in America and Varuna from India, they're working hard in the Middle East to convert them from war to love. Very hard. It seems to be the most hateful spot on the planet, and it needs a lot of work. So they're working very hard on that area. Varuna, the Indian god of healing, Onteha with magic, from North America. And let's see. Oh, Vidar, one of
the Norse
Odin's
god.
Sons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, also working with that.
Now, for people who aren't theosophically inclined, it's strange mentioning all these gods, all the different pantheons, but mm-hmm. For those who follow theosophy and the neo-theosophies, including the I Am movement, the pantheons work together to help the evolution of humanity and to help conditions on the human plane. So it's not unusual for Hercules, Athena, and Kuan Yin, and Jesus to be working together on a mutual project. And in terms of my own spirituality, I would much rather support that than any of the more contentious views of the pantheons.
Yes, Kuan Yin is the avatar of compassion.
Yes.
And she studied many, many eons to become that and to remain female in scope.
That's been pointed out, too, that unfortunately in a lot of the neo-theosophical I Am movements, almost everybody ascended is a male, and there's only a handful of females represented. That's changing now, though, so that's good.
Yes.
Is there one of our crew members, Nick Curto, he's a Urantia Book devotee. He started a prayer thing like at a certain time on a certain day for people to reconnect with the Valfor and some of the Venusian energies. Maybe we can do a thing, a prayer for world peace, and again, set a time and a day when people can do it. And whatever their spiritual backgrounds, whatever path they adhere to, if they would just put that aside for a little while and just ask the divine to help us with, like preferring peace to war, that might be something good we could do to help Aphrodite and the others with their tasks in the ancient or in the modern Near East, actually.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
I'm excited, Pam. This is really great.
So what else can I help you with?
That's it for now. Do you have anything you'd like to share? We have around 5 minutes. Or any words that anybody would like to say with Artemis, with Aphrodite, with anybody else you're connected with? Have any messages they'd like to convey to me or to those who are listening?
Oh, they're all gathering in my brain. Hold on. It's like everybody's raising their hand. Hera has a message for the people that are controlling the weather experiments. She says, it is a thing. It is real. It's not just a conspiracy theory. And really, you know, we have to be aware how to deal with this thing, because there are powers out there, human powers, that are messing around with the weather on a planet. And she says this is a real thing, and it's not just a conspiracy. So that's what she wants to put forth.
Thank you, Hera. Anybody else have their hands raised?
Oh, Apollo did.
Okay.
Apollo always has something, because he's got 9 different things going throughout eternity. You know, him and the Pleiades.
Mm-hmm.
There's a war on music at this point. One of the practice things that's happening is in Philadelphia with the Philly Pops and the Philadelphia Orchestra. And we honestly don't know where this is coming from, and we're trying to resolve this war on music. So if anybody has any ideas, put them forth. And hopefully we can work with that and see what the hell is going on with this war on music.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So that's from Apollo.
Thank you, Apollo.
And the others say they can wait for another time.
Okay, thank you very much, Olympians. And I'm going to ask Aphrodite one more question. Since she's working with the Duncans on spreading love, and she's working with this initiative to pray for love over war, is it okay if I combine this with what I'm doing with the the other group, the Sixth Revelation, in this way that'll be contributing toward that initiative, so we're not duplicating things.
As you wish.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
How can people contact you, Pamela?
Oh, I've said this numerous times, but nobody's ever contacted me, so it's always my pjfernsler@outlook.com.
Thank you very much. People contact me, though, and they say, when is Pam coming back? And I like Pam.
So you should say, what do you want her for? She's crazy.
No, you're awesome. That's why. I could answer that without you asking. Well, enjoy shore leave. Thank you very much for taking your time to speak to us tonight and to launch this new initiative. I will talk to you very soon, this week, in fact. We'll give you a call.
All right. Sounds good.
And thank you to our wonderful audience, whoever you are. And until next time, joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Take care, everybody. Good night.
Good night.